bringing attention to the destruction of the three World Trade Center towers in New York City on September 11th, 2001, and a whole lot more. This is 9/11 Free Fall. Good evening, everyone. I'm Andy Steele, your host. Thanks for tuning in. Today we're talking again about the mainstream media, and I interview Sean Hamilton. He's a former part of the mainstream media. He was a reporter for KPFA, and he talks about his experience as a reporter for that station, and we have a discussion about the state of our corporate press now and what factors have gone into making the situation that we see today. So I'll be playing that for you very soon. Very interesting interview there. Quick programming note, I am taking the week off next week, but there will still be a 9/11 free fall. John Michael Talbot is going to be filling in for me and recording an episode. And he's been on the show in the past, and he's one of the guys behind the Debunking the Debunkers website that produces so many of the good articles about the topic that we cover, the controlled demolitions of the Twin Towers and Building 7 on 9/11. And I'm not sure who his guest is going to be yet, but I'm certain it's going to be a good episode. So tune in for that on February the 6th. I'm looking forward to it myself. I'm also looking forward to unplugging during the few days that I have off from my day job, which I usually spend putting together this show. My birthday is on the 5th of February. I'm going to be 35 years old. Cannot believe how fast time is going by. And I was talking to a woman last week who was just, you know, generally commenting on her current situation, and she said it herself. She can't believe what we have to deal with in our country and getting people to look at the reality of what happened to those buildings in New York 12 years ago. And, of course, all of the symptoms of the post-9/11 world. That's why it's so important to make people realize what really happened that day. And I can't believe it either. Though I've adjusted to the situation, you know, it's sort of like a horror movie, like a zombie apocalypse, you know, like I'm the survivor, and you just accept the situation for what it is, and you do your best to overcome it, to make the situation go away. But as I've mentioned before on this show, and it gets brought up in the interview that I'm going to play later, I was in my last semester of college when 9/11 happened. So pretty much my whole adult life has been the quote-unquote post-9/11 world. All right, the stepped-up propaganda, the surrendering of civil liberties, the snake oil salesmen from government and think tanks trying to always sell the next war to us. I mean, that's been the chatter in the background of my generation's productive years, and no doubt this has influenced lives. All right, just as history has always influenced people's lives from the dawn of time. And I grew up as a teenager in the 90s, and there were wars and things going on, but it just seemed different. And I don't know if I'm just looking at things with rosy-colored glasses, because when you're a kid, you don't really care about what's going on in the world, or maybe we as a society weren't as awakened back then, and we didn't have the internet telling us what was really going on, so we were blissfully ignorant and happy. At least most of us were. It's kind of like what some people think the Garden of Eden story in Genesis is an allegory for. You know, increasing awareness of humankind, abandoning the bliss of ignorance. You know, that Adam and Eve ate the apple and suddenly realized they were naked, and their awakening after eating the apple caused their metaphorical banishment from the Garden of Eden. I don't know. It's better to know the truth than to stumble around in ignorance, though. And even though history, the history that's been created for us has been pretty blah over the past decade and more, we do have an opportunity to make history right now. And some people get concerned about the consequences of exposing what really happened to the Twin Towers and Building 7 on 9/11. That gets brought up in the interview you're going to hear in a few minutes, too. But no doubt, even if there might be some pain at first, you know, acknowledging the truth would be the first step towards a renaissance, in my opinion. All right, I really believe that. And it would be a period of time that would be so much better than what we have right now. And I imagine it as a time when technology would liberate people instead of trapping them. All right, where vigilance and questioning authority is taught as a a virtue again, instead of a warning sign that you could be a terrorist. You know, we're these phony brown nosers that you see on TV posing as our journalists and our government officials. And these people are out of our lives for good, and their influence is just gone. I mean, nothing will ever be perfect. Don't get me wrong. But still, it could be a heck of a lot better. And you out there are going to make it better. I don't doubt it. One single bit. I have faith in you. So remember that. Remember that as you're moving forward. If you don't believe in yourself, for even just one moment, I believe in you. You are going to make a difference. Okay, some 9/11 related news. First of all, the Department of Commerce Inspector General has responded to Dr. William Pepper and his letter to them about NIST's omission of building features in its World Trade Center 7 report, and the fact that correcting the data totally renders NIST's explanation for what happened to Building 7 impossible. And I covered that a few weeks ago with Tony Zambodi and Jerry B. You can go in the archives to hear that episode. The response is not the final word from the DOC. All it really is a standard letter that notifies Pepper that they've referred his allegations to management officials of the affected DOC component. That's what it says. Your allegation has been forwarded to the National Institute of Standards and Technology. So that's what's going on with that story. Just another step in the process. Nothing too exciting, but that's just to keep you updated. It will be interesting, to say the least, to see what happens with this. How are they going to weasel out of it? It's going to be pretty hard. And we played one of the clips last week. Word of NIST submissions are making the airwaves on Washington Journal, and congressmen and the people at home are being alerted of it. Well, you need to help out too, of course, folks. So educate yourself about the matter and tell as many people about it as possible. All right, listen to that 9/11 Freefall episode. It was on January the 9th of this year. And you can learn more about it. You can go to 911freefall.com to hear that. You can also go to the archives at noliesradio.org. Speaking of Washington Journal and the omitted data in the NIST report, Senator Bernie Sanders got a Building 7 question again this week. This one was asking him about the very issue that I was just talking about. The following clip is from January the 28th, when he was a guest on that program.
Can benefit from the greatness of America.
Tempe, Arizona, Democrats Line. This is Steve. Hello.
Hello, Senator Sanders. Being the longest-serving independent member of Congress in American history is a great accomplishment. And I think it's because you're one of the few in Congress willing to talk about issues that constantly get ignored by mainstream media. So I have two related questions. My first question to you, sir, is, would you personally be willing to independently review a letter written to the Department of Commerce by Dr. William Pepper? This letter states that the 2008 report by NIST on the destruction of Building 7 on 9/11 omitted critical data, which would have made their collapse due to fire explanation impossible.
No, I won't. I do not believe that 9/11 was a conspiracy. I believe that Al-Qaeda and bin Laden caused 9/11. So that's my view.
Indianapolis, Indiana, Gloria, Independent Line. Hi, go ahead.
So the caller says nothing about a conspiracy or even a controlled demolition. Caller just briefly states what's in the Pepper letter, and he asks the senator if he would read the letter. And Bernie Sanders says, no, I don't think it was a conspiracy. Dismissive, misrepresenting what the caller said, refuses to look at any new information. And that's Bernie Sanders, at least what I've seen of him in the last two times he was on that program. And I know that some folks, particularly left-leaning folks, like to make a big deal out of him. You know, they like his economic positions. People are impressed that he's got that I for independent next to his name. But personally, when I listen to him speak, I'm really not all that impressed. You know, as far as I'm concerned, he should have an S by his name for same old, or status quo, or still a politician. And this video should be studied in future history classes. Right there. An example of the bizarre psychology that has infected Americans during this period in our history. And I'm not saying that Sanders is a bad guy. I'm not saying he's a good guy either. I'm just going based off of what I see of him when he's faced with this critical issue. And to refuse to even look at a letter or any of the evidence that this building couldn't have fallen because of fire, that's not rational, folks. It's not rational unless you have a worldview that you're desperately trying to protect for yourself. Or if you're actively trying to help cover up the crime. And I'm not going to go there. That's not what the show's purpose is. But look at it. It's not even something that happened behind closed doors, 9/11, Building 7. Or which you need to make 100 leaps to look at in an alternative way, alright? I mean, a 47-story steel-framed high-rise fell straight down, supposedly because of fire, in 6.5 seconds. And that doesn't happen, folks. All right, common sense should tell you there's something wrong with that story when you watch the building fall. And has Bernie Sanders even watched Building 7 falling? That would be a good next question for him. I wonder if he would refuse to answer whether or not he did. In fact, I would like to know what kind of outrage people have done to Bernie Sanders. So if you out there are listening to this program, I go to 911freefall.com, click the box on the left-hand side to contact me, and if you've got some story about reaching out to Bernie Sanders about Building 7, let me know if you let him, if he has seen the video, if you've watched him watch a video of Building 7 falling. And what was his reaction then? I want to know these things. In other news, Fran Schur has a new article up at ae911truth.org. It's the third part in her series called Why Do Good People Become Silent or Worse About 9/11? The title of this particular chapter is Obeying and Believing Authority. And this is a very interesting look at the psychology of obedience. And it cites experiments that were done to study how people deal with authority figures, like the Milgram experiment she starts off describing. That's where the experimenter made the subject give shocks to what was really an actor. And every time this actor got a question wrong, they were quizzing him. So every time the actor got a question wrong that the experimenter asked, they would give him a shock. And the subject didn't know, of course, that what the true nature of the experiment was that he was a part of. So every time he pushed the button and gave the shock to the actor, he thought it was the real deal. He thought he was really shocking the guy. And the majority of the subjects were willing to continue giving the shocks when the authority figure, the experimenter, told them to do so, even though the actor would scream and say, "I don't want to do this anymore. You know, please let me out." And at one point, he just went silent. You know, so they're thinking they can't see him on the other side of the wall. They're thinking the guy could be laying in there, passed out, dead. They don't know. So that kind of heightens the fear in them, but they keep going. A lot of them do. All right, and it showed that Americans are just as susceptible as the Germans were to doing bad things when they're told by someone in a position of authority to do it. That we're not that special. That we're human just like everybody else. And these are important things to learn about. I remember watching this video back when I was in college. And it had a profound effect on me. It stayed with me. This is the kind of real education that we should be giving to our students in public schools. These are the kind of videos that we should be showing them. They should be learning about these things sooner than before they get to college. They shouldn't have to get thousands of dollars into debt just to learn about the Milgram experiment. And maybe if more of them did learn about that, maybe if questioning authority became more acceptable, became more encouraged, maybe we wouldn't have 9/11s. Maybe we wouldn't have the situation that we have right now. Just a thought. So this is a very interesting article. Again, ae911truth.org. Check that out. So what we're going to do right now, at this moment, we're going to do what we do every week. We're going to take 10 seconds of silence to remember the victims of 9/11 and their families and all of the people who died in the wars that followed 9/11. Do that starting now. and that is 10 seconds. All right, in the following interview, Sean Hamilton talks about his experience as a reporter, and he offers his own thoughts on what he believes may be going on behind the big wall that the media has put up to block the controlled demolition evidence from the general public. Now, occasionally this discussion goes into other areas of the 9/11 crime, such as, you know, the Pentagon and the air exercises, which is beyond the scope of AE 9/11 Truth's focus. So let me just remind you, the opinions expressed by guests and myself on the show about topics beyond the controlled demolitions of the buildings in New York on 9/11 are strictly our own and do not necessarily reflect those of AE 9/11 Truth.
Sean Hamilton is a California writing teacher who has reported over the years for KPFA radio and other news agencies. In 2011, he received a Project Censored Award for his news coverage of the Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth press conference announcing its 1,000th professional member. He's the author of a soon-to-be-released book about his father, who was a fighter pilot and German prisoner during World War II, who turned against U.S. foreign policy during the Vietnam War. Sean, welcome to 9/11 Freefall.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Now, tell us a little bit more about your background beyond the quick bio I just read for you. What kind of subject matters did you report on?
Well, I was largely a Capitol reporter for KPFA, although I did their training programs in San Francisco. I had to drive from Sacramento, and so I was here next to the Capitol, and it just made sense that I would, cover that. And so since about 1995, I've been, covering the Capitol off and on, and that's what I was doing when 9/11 happened. I've since quit covering the Capitol for reasons I can explain.
Right, and I want to get into this because you awoke and that had a big influence on your career. Now, when you say you're covering the Capitol, did you basically focus on the same kind of stuff that you see day in and day out from the mainstream media, the bickering over the partisan issues, the bills that they get brought up in Congress, certain things like that, elections? Is that what basically you were covering?
Well, just anything that was interesting. I could pick stories myself, or KPFA would assign me stories. A lot of times those were budget related, so it was kind of dry material. But among the budget stories and things like that, I could pick kind of juicy stories once in a while. I had a little bit of free rein. Yeah.
That's interesting, and we're going to get into that because I want an insider like you to kind of tell our audience, what you experienced, what you saw, because I feel, at least from my own personal experience, I know I'm not alone as an outsider to all of this. You wonder what goes on behind the scenes, what kind of discussions are had about topics like the topic that we talk about every week on the show, which, of course, is the controlled demolition evidence of the Twin Towers in Building 7 being brought down with explosives on 9/11, and what kind of editorial discussions are made about, whether or not we're going to cover this explosive evidence. You've seen that firsthand, and we want to get an idea of what's going on behind the scenes there. Before we move on to that, though, for you personally, going from being in the quote-unquote mainstream media, what woke you up to the 9/11 truth evidence, and what prompted you to make it a part of your life to take action for it?
Well, it didn't happen immediately, although I was watching the news. I was teaching, and I was watching the news before school on September 11th, and I saw the second plane hit the Trade Tower. And I had listened to Dick Gregory for years, the activist and comedian, and I immediately recalled something I'd heard him say in reference to the plutocrats who run the country, and he had said, "They're planning a big old surprise party for y'all." So when I saw the plane hit, that was the first thing I thought, this is the surprise party. And my opinion hasn't changed. I had a friend of mine that was staying with me named Dan Rogenkamp. We were teachers together in Taiwan. And he was working at the school in Sacramento that I was at. He was staying with me. And I asked for his recollection of what was said when we saw the second plane hit. And this is his exact quote. He said, the main thing I remember was that you immediately said something like, well, there goes all of our rights. I remember being impressed at the time that you could make such an observation so quickly. You really did say that, don't you remember? And I didn't remember, but I'm glad he reminded me of it. In any case, losing our rights was exactly what happened, no matter who was behind the attacks.
Well, it sounds like you had an understanding of the world and what was waiting in the wings in the aftermath of the 9/11 attacks. And I wish I was that sophisticated. I got swept up in the whole, revenge and bloodthirst as the rest of the nation. And I wasn't even, they brought up the Patriot Act. I didn't think twice about it. I didn't care about politics, about
I'm
any of that stuff.
You're younger than I am, huh?
I was 20. It was my last semester of college. I had to do one more semester in the fall to get out of there. And I, not to talk too much about myself here, but I was not really concerned with such things. My concerns were that of a college student, who's out on his own and in the first couple of years of his adult life, and the stuff you're worrying about there. And it was like a big wake up call. And so when it happened. I had never really thought to question what the television told me. I just went along with it and figured if there was something more to the story, that the television would tell me the truth. And, how funny it was, or not funny, but to watch the whole system kind of just slowly melt down to the point where I did start questioning it. But, I mean, back to yourself, though, you had an idea. And so even if you weren't questioning, regardless of whether or not you were questioning who was behind the attacks from the very beginning, you knew what was going to be waiting in the aftermath and how important this event was. Now, for you to question who was behind it and to question the nature of the crime and what other planning went into it, what did you consider to be the most compelling evidence to bring you around fully to being a quote-unquote 9/11 truther?
Well, I don't call myself a 9/11 truther. I just don't like to be pigeonholed, but I guess you could classify me that way. Although I understand from some information I've seen recently that according to Homeland Security, 9/11 truth people are considered terrorists. If that's true, that's pretty frightening. But any of the truthers I've met, nobody seems violent to me, so I don't know what they're talking about. Anyway, let me back up just a little bit. One reason that I may have had the initial impression that I did was I'm about 54 years old, and I came in to the JFK situation in the 70s, kind of before the mainstream had, really gotten a hold of that story. And I dissected that thing and really found out the forces that were behind JFK's assassination. And so that is my background that kind of gave me the perspective to interpret this, I think, more correctly than the mainstream media has. And it was my insight into those forces. So that's, JFK is the main part of that, okay? The other thing was, when I saw the buildings drop that day, this was day one. I told my friend, I said, that looked like a controlled demolition. And I remember that because that was before we'd heard the term implosion, right? Mm-hmm. But it just had that visual of a planned demolition. And that was day one, see? But I didn't commit to that idea. I just kind of filed it away because I was starting a job. And so I was preoccupied really for the next few years getting this full-time teaching job going. And I guess the first real indication of funny business I saw was a website that invited visitors to hunt the Boeing, and it showed the damaged Pentagon pretty much free of any debris that could be construed as a, exploded jumbo jet. And so that was pretty eye-opening and impelled me to look a bit deeper. And I think that was the website that also carried that Pentagon video of a plane hitting the Pentagon that doesn't show a plane. And so that was what really got me to start looking at the information. But it wasn't until late 2010 that I really got to be involved. And I was reporting for KPFA News at the time, again, largely capital stuff. But I'd been hearing about the AE 9/11 Truth group and decided that I wanted to do this story that was coming up They were announcing their 1,000th professional member, and I thought it was a good story. KPFA, the weekday news, wasn't interested. So I covered it as a credentialed reporter. I was credentialed with KPFA and at the state capitol. But this story I covered at my own expense and at my own initiative. And so, like I said, the weekday news anchors weren't interested, which just blew me away. Because by the time it ran on a Sunday, the press conference was on a Friday. So it was 2 days old. You know, in news, you want to run the story right after the event. And because the weekday news wouldn't run it, I didn't get it run until Sunday. So it was a couple days old. And that really kind of stung because, you know, KPFA is supposed to be different than mainstream media. And yet, just like mainstream media, they were shying away. And so that caused me a little bit of grief. I don't know quite how to explain that. I have a feeling it had something to do with Amy Goodman's strange attitude towards the subject of 9/11. But in any case, 9/11 was not treated as a normal story at KPFA. The standards were different.
Well, can you elaborate on that? Because that kind of goes into that veil that we can kind of see through. And, I describe that as you can look into the smoke and you can make out silhouettes, and you see that in the reactions of people in the media, the folks like on C-SPAN, the folks like Tucker Carlson not showing Building 7 falling when he's interviewing Stephen Jones. So you see this obvious discomfort with the issue and this concerted effort to not give it the proper attention that it deserves. But you don't really understand the motivation. You can speculate and you can listen to educated people and come to your own conclusions, but you don't see it from the inside. So to go into that smoke and make out some details, what went on there, at KPFA with this particular story, or are you looking through the smoke yourself and only seeing shadows?
Of course.
Were you given any kind of explanation?
I'm looking through the smoke. Reporters look through the smoke. They're not behind the scenes. I wasn't behind the scenes. No, we're being lied to just like everyone else, you know. Now, as far as the inner workings of KPFA, I'm not privy to that. I don't know, you know, what they have decided, what their policies are. I'm as much in the dark as anyone else. So, yeah, the idea that I'm behind the scenes somehow, it's really not true, you know, or it's just not accurate, you know.
Well, that's something very interesting for our audience to hear, and that kind of changes the perception probably for a lot of people because, you know, you see somebody, and I realize you weren't on NBC or ABC or anything like that, but you said, but just using that example, you see somebody like, some TV show host, and you think that this person has this great editorial power to decide what they're going to cover. You go up to a reporter and you might give them your information, a reporter like yourself, and who knows, maybe they go back and they propose the idea to an editor, maybe they write a story about it, but then the report doesn't get into the newspaper. And people think, oh, that's a stupid reporter.
I'm not completely sure I understand KPFA's bias. As I started to say that, I realized that I definitely don't understand KPFA's bias. All news agencies have their own bias, and the individual reporters don't necessarily understand what that is.
But the point I'm trying to drive home for our audience is that it's not necessarily always the reporter's fault.
Even if they come back
and they say, this is compelling and I want to cover this, they may not have any final control over what actually gets into the newspaper.
No, that's the truth. That's the situation. The reporters don't have that much power. It's the people that pay for the station, that run the station, that own the station. That's who decides what goes in.
Now, we get this image in our heads, I guess, when we're kids, especially people who want to grow up and be a journalist, do a job of reporter, that imagine this heroic person who nobly pursues the truth wherever it leads. And obviously, as we've seen, real life doesn't always afford a reporter that chance, especially if they're in a corporate news setting. So, again, looking through the smoke, what influences do you think play upon the reporter's ability to bring important and truthful information as he or she sees it to the public? What do you think is pulling on the editorial decisions that are going on at radio stations, TV stations, newspapers?
Well, I can't even begin to guess at mainstream stations, you know, what those forces are. the reason I started reporting for KPFA was simply because it was one of the Pacifica stations, and I thought that I would have more latitude, and I generally did. I mean, I don't want to bag on KPFA or any of the Pacifica stations. They do great work. They have for years, you know. But it was really disappointing when I came across what I agreed with David Griffin, who said 9/11 is the big story. I agreed with that. It is the big story. And I just thought their reaction was really weird, that, you know, they would run all this other stuff, all these other issues that the other mainstream media, you know, wouldn't touch, but yet when it came to 9/11, suddenly the standard changed and they didn't want to touch it. And I never did get a convincing explanation why that is. Maybe you can find out, but I don't know. And it's really bugging me to this day. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's bugging all of us, because I consider that to be the biggest hurdle, even more so than with the politicians, because if the media came around, there would go the pressure onto the political system to work for the people again. I mean, we've seen example after example of how the media can shape in public opinion, can make or break a politician or make or break a scandal. And I mean, this is a scandal of epic proportions. I don't need to state that with the issues surrounding Building 7 and the Twin Towers and the controlled demolition evidence. And I consider that, like I said, the biggest obstacle that the people are facing. And that is where the battle really needs to be to get the information out to the masses. And there has been a revolution over the last, I want to say probably, if I were to estimate, about since 2005, when user-created content started becoming popular and people could start using it to share information with each other and to get the news out and be citizen journalists. And you know, it's interesting to listen to you because, again, we're looking inside, but we're finding out that the reporters don't have as much power as a regular person thinks they do. There's actually a video that was up on 9/11 Blogger of Austin Farwell. He's the he's an artist out there in New York City who was standing outside the New York Times building and asking people as they come in, asking reporters as they go to work, you know, why aren't you covering this Building 7 issue? And the reporter says something to him like, you know, I can't make that decision. I don't remember the exact quote, but it conveyed how powerless some of these folks are. And I was just having somebody tell me the other day, you know, when you watch a TV show, you know, sometimes the person who's on camera is the lowest on the totem pole, that they really don't have as much control. So it's just so interesting to hear that perspective from somebody who, I mean, you would think was on the inside from you know, as a reporter for KPFA, like you were. Now, how many reporters would you say voice feelings, of being conflicted with what they have to do and what they want to do? I mean, did you ever talk to any other reporters about this, or were you kind of isolated?
Well, I was kind of isolated because I lived in Sacramento, so I only went to the station once in a while. I filed over the phone, and mm-hmm. so I was just kind of out of touch. So I don't really know. But you did ask, like, you know, what drove the elite or what drives the elite media, and you know, I think that's the answer. They work for the elite. We're talking the mainstream media. They're working for the elite, and there's a certain agenda that they have to uphold. And any story that really threatens that agenda doesn't fly. You know, that's the current media that we have. It's not really a free press like we think. It's controlled by money, markets, not market forces, but monetary forces. There's a difference. And that's where we're at. And, you know, even at KPFA, they've got their own agenda and what looks good for them and what doesn't. And I still am trying to find out why KPFA feels the way they do about 9/11. At first, I thought maybe it was because Richard Gage was a Republican and some of the others are Republicans, but that answer wasn't adequate. That doesn't quite solve the problem. But the effect was that I eventually gave up reporting. You know, I haven't even watched television in 3 years. I don't listen to the news at all anymore. I guess gagged on it. I can't listen to that stuff anymore. It's just lies. I can't hear it. It makes me too upset.
watching the news, I have to watch it because, you know, I do this show and I have to focus on when they talk about 9/11. And, you know, I've been a blogger for a different site, so I have to keep track of what's going on. But it's so aggravating to see some of these folks. And I personally believe, when I say these folks, I'm actually talking about these reporters, these so-called journalists. I don't really think of them as real journalists. And somebody made the comment on C-SPAN on Saturday that the corporate media is really just here to handle the people instead of helping them. That it's almost like they're just babysitters. Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, you're onto something. You're right. That's all I was going to say. You're right. It's they're just delivering the lie to the public.
Well, I've called it the customer service of the empire. I mean,
yeah,
somewhat jokingly and somewhat not. But see, I worked in customer service for 3 years for an insurance company. And I know what that is like to not be really in charge of anything, but having to justify things that, I mean, sometimes there's a rational basis for what the company does. A lot of times, though, it's just, you know what the basis is. It's just to not pay claims. And you have to explain that to people who are very angry, who maybe technically, you know, they were misled, but, you know, technically the insurance company doesn't have to pay it because the person didn't read their contract or they didn't fully understand the benefits. But also, too, the way that the benefits were described to them wasn't very upfront either. So while legally the insurance company is in their right, morally they are not. And so you're in the middle having to explain this, you know, why you didn't pay for this $2,000 work that the person had done that they thought was covered from the very beginning. And certainly maybe they made mistakes, but still it's just, it's sickening. And it has an impact on your, I guess, your spirit, for lack of a better word. And
sure,
these people are in that position. But at the same time, you have folks who have dreamed of being on TV their entire lives. I mean, you know, it's funny. I'm an adult now, but I'm a little bit smarter, actually a lot smarter, and a little bit more mature, but you still have those same kinds of feelings and passions when you're a kid. And, you know, these people who grew up wanting to be famous and being on TV, now they're getting it. Now they're doing it. They're going to cocktail parties in Washington, D.C. They're living it up. They have nice, fancy cars. And I'm not trying to criticize people for having money or demonizing success, but you can understand when a person has gotten to this level why they're not going to jeopardize that for an issue that they don't see too many other people stepping up for among their peer group. And
yeah,
especially when
there.
They – go ahead.
Now, you're onto something there. In the 50s in Cuba, the elite there was said to possess what they called the little bottle. And the little bottle meant that you have all the advantages of that society. And, of course, Batista was a brutal dictator before, you know, Castro came in and ousted him. So I think what you're describing is exactly that. It's people with the little bottle. They've got the advantages. They don't want to give those advantages up. And I don't know whether it's conscious or unconscious, but it's in their self-interest to ignore evidence of corruption and gloss over the lies and perpetuate the elitist regime.
Right, and I think, I mean, it's funny because when you really analyze this, the explanations are very simple. And, you know, some people think that there's some just grand conspiracy all over the world and that, you know, everybody's in on it, the reporters, and they get the word. I don't think it really works like that at all. I think that humanity gets in the way of truth getting out. And I think the fact that people are concerned about their paychecks, people are concerned about their acclaim and their career, and mass peer pressure is what really plays a hand in keeping this stuff quiet, because these systems reinforce themselves. I remember when I first started waking up to this years ago, and I'm talking about, you know, when I just first seen Building 7, and I think that some actor had come out and made some comment about it, and the news was jumping on him, and I was seeing how the news and the media was jumping on him, and I said, well, no, that's actually a very rational question he's asking. And I wasn't even committed to the idea it was controlled demolition or anything like that. I was just starting to question it and defending him. I was out on a date with some girl who only had one date, but I said something like, You know, somehow it came up. I don't remember how. But I said, no, he's asking very rational questions. The first thing that she said to me was, oh, you sound like one of these conspiracy theorists. You're scaring me. And it's this attitude that if you question anything in our system, if you use any kind of critical thinking on any topics that that the media has already decided and the conclusion for you, has already given you the answer, they don't want to question anymore, that there's something wrong with you.
Sure,
and
the media is the
do
one
not
that
want to
gave...
fall off that mountain.
I'm sorry.
No,
yeah,
go ahead.
The media is the one that provided that convenient little term, conspiracy theorist, you know. It started back with JFK, you know. There was just a term to, you know, denigrate anybody that questions the official version. And that's all they're doing. And the media carries it to the people. I mean, you saw, you know, those clips that we watched or listened to from CNN and elsewhere. You know, if you listen to those carefully, I mean, besides just that general atmosphere of, you know, they treat the subject like it's a joke and they treat the callers like, you know, smugly, condescendingly, like they're uneducated children. If you really analyze, like, what the message is that they're giving to these people, I mean, I come to the conclusion, I think that these guests that they have on, especially the politicians, are coached. They're told what to say by somebody. I don't think that's being conspiratorialist to say that. I noticed I listened to probably 10 or 15 of these, and I noticed that, you know, one of their lines was, the 9/11 committee's investigation is the most thorough investigation ever seen. A bunch of them said that. You know, another set said, send me your information, I'll pass it along. That was another line, right? Or, I was in the World Trade Center, therefore I don't believe it. Or, I was in Washington when it happened, therefore I don't believe it. Complete fallacies, but yet that's their reason, right? The commentators, they would say, we welcome all points of view, when obviously they don't welcome 9/11 calls at all, or there's an organized effort out there. And on that, I think that's really interesting, right? People don't organize unless they think something's really important. And so this so-called organized effort that they talk about represents a lot of us, U.S. citizens, who want answers. And yet the commentators act as if we should all be ignored because we're concerned. So that's why I quit watching TV.
Right. He's talking about the C-SPAN clips. There's
yeah.
another one that'll be coming out soon, by the way, to the audience. You know, you're totally right. And you know, we've discussed them pretty thoroughly. But it's great to hear you kind of summarize it. And about your point about them saying an organized effort. Well, yeah. I mean, we get taught growing up that we are a democracy, and I'm not going to split hairs on whether it's a democracy or a republic or anything like that, but that's what we get taught growing up, and that the way to get your voice out and the way that things work in our country is to organize and bring the bring your point of view to your elected officials, and America will work. But then when you become an adult and you do this,
yeah.
the system gets angry with you for
exactly.
it. They don't
yeah.
like it.
You're not supposed to actually do it. You're supposed to love the country and, you know, love it so much that you don't actually use democracy, which is
well, you're not
ridiculous.
Supposed to do it for the things that they don't like. I mean,
yeah,
you know,
right.
they love it if you do a Save the Whales or one of these. And I know I'm not trashing the environmental movement, but that's
no,
a politically
safe issues,
correct. Yeah, it's a politically correct issue.
Right.
And
right.
they've given you these topics that it's okay to be concerned about.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of just reminds me of school. You know, there's certain things that you can write about in your stories and other things
uh-huh.
that you can't. You can write about, you can write about some story about being having an adventure with a dragon and everything, but don't write some horror story where, you know, people are getting their heads chopped off because you're a kid and you're just naturally thinking of, like, just, you know, gory, weird stuff because you're a kid. And
well,
so it's
what,
like you
that's
you
what
have
school's
this,
for, man. That's what school's for, is to get you to think along those certain grooves, you know. And to get you to prevent you from thinking along others. Yeah, I'm
exactly.
a teacher, but I've seen that from the inside too. And there's a definite element of propaganda involved in the educational system. Don't think there isn't.
Right. And you know what's funny is, like, every year, you know, they have these, the White House Correspondents' Dinner. And you see all these politicians all in their tuxedos and elegant dresses. And you see all these reporters, these people that are allegedly bringing you, you know, the definitive word on what's going on in their tuxedos and their elegant dresses, and they're all sitting amongst each other, all drinking, all having fun, all laughs, and, you know, the president gets up there and makes jokes about having drone strikes, President Bush gets up there and makes jokes about not finding weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Everybody laughs and
fucks.
But the point I want to make is not just the insensitivity of these people who are out of touch with the American public, but the fact that the media is so in bed with the Washington establishment that they're all friends with each other, that they're all hanging out behind the scenes, they're all going to cocktail parties with each other. And they want to say that the media is this independent, you know, unofficial fourth branch of government that's looking out and is being vigilant for the needs of the Americans and holding the government accountable. But how can they hold each other accountable if they're all best friends?
No, they've been let in the club. That's the problem. I was going to address that with Representative Karen Bass, whose clip that I watched. I interviewed Karen Bass when she was in the California Assembly, and I like her a lot. I mean, she's a really open person, very progressive voice, but you heard her on C-SPAN. After she got to Congress, she said she didn't think we needed another investigation into 9/11 since we already had one. And I've heard this approach over and over again. And knowing Karen Bass as I did, that to me, again, sounded like a prepared line that Congress members have been coached on.
Well, that's interesting. What did she say about the issue before she got there?
Not much. She just kind of grinned and just that was her response. I mean, she didn't really address it. Like any of those, you notice all those people, they make fun of the idea and condescend to the callers asking the question, but they never answer the question. They never answer the question because they can't. And I think, you know, with a lot of those people, it's not that they know something and aren't telling. I think they're just as ignorant as most of us, the people they represent. They really don't know. I think that's most likely the case. They really don't know. They're too busy with the budget and stuff. They're not looking at the facts. They haven't seen what you and I have seen, perhaps. You know, we assume they know more than we do. I don't think that's true necessarily. I'd like to question that.
Yeah, I've had someone raise this point to me. I want to get your opinion on it. Do you think that people in the media might be staying silent about this issue because they're worried about national security themselves and the consequences of what they think might happen if they did shine a light, a national spotlight, on the controlled demolition evidence, the implications and what it would do to the country if this became mainstream and on the front page of newspapers all across the country? Do you think they're worried about that?
No, I can't guess what people's motives are. I mean, yeah, I'm sure there's got to be some people in the media that suspect, you know, funny business. There has to be, you know, but why they don't speak out, you know, is it economic? Is it fear for their jobs? Is it fear for their life? Who knows? I can't even begin to guess. I don't know. I wouldn't want to get into conspiracy theories. Just kidding.
No, I understand. So you mentioned the C-SPAN clips that you viewed there, and you kind of gave a general idea of, you know, your impression of them. Do you have anything to add to that? I mean, what's the overall picture you're seeing laid out by watching the first five videos of those calls into C-SPAN?
Well, I listened to more than that, but I'd like to know. Assuming that they are being coached, and I really do think they are, so if anybody can address that, I'd like to hear from them. It seems to me that, you know, I'd like to know where's the coaching coming from? Who's organizing this, you know? And it's probably somebody in national security state somewhere. I don't know. You know, but as far as being afraid of, like, the reporters being quiet because they're afraid of Al-Qaeda or whatever, you know, I don't know. I just can't buy that. Maybe.
Not necessarily being afraid of Al-Qaeda, but being afraid of, like, I had somebody raise this point to me earlier in the week. You know, what if it does come out? What if it's on the front page, controlled demolition, new investigation, we were lied to? What that would do to undermine the trust, not only just of Americans and their government, but the world has in America, and how that would jeopardize our national security. I think that might play into some people's hands. That might play into play in their thoughts, like good people, you know, who might want to speak out about it, but they're afraid of the consequences of speaking out about it, not just for themselves, but for the big picture. I mean, it's something to consider. I think it would be the greatest thing that ever happened to the country, that they would, that if you could have Americans stand up and expose this in what is a short amount of time in world history. You know, it seems like a long time because it's our lives, and 12 years have passed, and that's a big chunk out of a human life. But in the big span of world history, it's not a big deal. And what a great thing it would be for the history books to show that, no, you can't pull this stuff in America. You know, within 12
years. Well, yeah, America's supposed to be different. I mean, that's the thing. We're supposed to be a democracy. And, you know, our system's supposed to work best when things are transparent. And, you know, and I'm just operating on that assumption that we're a democracy or even a republic. And, you know, that's until I know differently, until they admit it differently, I'm going to just act that way. And that's what I've been doing, you know.
What do you think it'll take for the media to start covering this? What do the activists need to do different?
I guess the irrefutable evidence that gets looked at, but as long as they just refuse to look, you know, they being the media and the government, you know, I don't see, it's a kind of a collusion. I mean, isn't that the definition of fascism? You get the military and the corporations and the media and everybody together, you know, politicians, and they all kind of work in concert. That's the definition of fascism.
Right. No, I mean, it's a terrible situation that we find ourselves in. I never thought my adult life would be like this, that this would be the future awaiting myself and my generation. But here we are, and we have to do something about it because things only get worse. And I've made this point on the show before. If you let the establishment, whoever was responsible for bringing down the towers, if you let them get away with an act like that, so brazen, to just bring down these giant skyscrapers in the middle of New York City on a bright blue Tuesday morning and cover it up, cover up the real evidence of what happened to those buildings, who knows what they're going to do next time. So it's important to speak out and to keep a new 9/11 from ever happening again by making them afraid of ever doing it again and letting them know that we know what the real story is. So that's, you know, people need to speak out, and people like you need to be speaking out and doing what you're doing. And I want to make sure that we talk about your book today, because you've got a new book coming out. It sounds interesting. I mentioned it earlier in your intro, but what is the title? What is it about?
Well, the title is it's called Be All You Can Be. It's from the old Army recruiting ads. Mm-hmm. And I wrote this book. It's not something I wrote to sell. It's something I wrote for my son, because my father, who was a P-51 Mustang pilot and a prisoner in a German war camp during the World War II, he died right before my son was born, so my son never knew him. So I wrote the book really to acquaint my son with my father. And it was based on a bunch of letters that my dad had written during World War II. And after he died, I inherited those letters, and I started reading them, and he was a really good writer, good observation skills, and they were just fascinating to me. And what really shocked me, this is what I didn't know before, is that I had only known him since the 60s when I was born. And my dad absolutely, I mean, he retired from the military as a major in the Air Force, and yet he absolutely, I knew him as completely anti-military. He had completely rejected the whole military-industrial complex. And, you know, he died opposed to the whole thing. He completely changed. And it was just, that was the only guy I knew, the anti-military father that I had. And when I read these letters and realized the extent of his military background, I could not believe the transformation. It was just really stunning, very atypical of people of his generation.
Does the book get into what transformed him?
Well, a bit, yeah. He realized, I guess, after the war, well, let me back up. I want to say one thing. You know how people often compare 9/11 to Pearl Harbor?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and, you know, there's been the suggestion that, you know, 9/11 was a trigger event that, you know, led us into Iraq and Afghanistan. Well, if you'll remember, right before Roosevelt got us into World War II, he said this, "And while I am talking to you mothers and fathers, I give you one more assurance. I have said this before, but I say it again and again and again. Your boys are not going to be sent into any foreign wars." You see, he needed Pearl Harbor to justify entry into World War II. And this surprise attack, the so-called surprise attack that they had, well, I found out that my dad was in Pearl Harbor in 1938, okay? He was on the USS Saratoga. This is when he was in the Navy. And it was on a cruise to Pearl Harbor, and he inquired about these defensive fortifications that he saw being erected near Diamond Head. And he was told they were for an anticipated attack by Japan. This is in 1938. Some surprise, don't you think?
It's interesting. You know, it's amazing what we learn about history as time goes on and these things kind of leak out. I mean, what's interesting with 9/11, though, is because of the Internet, and more specifically, I say, because of user-created content, these things are coming out quick. They're coming out in times when people are still in office, when people are still holding seats in certain government agencies, and when the issue is still fresh in people's minds, like it happened to them. Like right now, you know, the people born after Pearl Harbor, after World War II was already over and resolved, and the world had moved on, they look at these things as something that happened in history. Same thing has happened with JFK and people who question that. A lot of people, you know, if they think of the past as being literally in black and white, I mean, intellectually they know better, but when they think of World War II, they think of black and white photos. They don't think of something happening in their time period right before them, conceivably.
Right.
With 9/11, this happened in all of our lifetime. You know, pretty much anybody that's has a say in things and can voice their opinion right now was alive during that event, and it wasn't that far off, and so it still affects them. It still deeply impacts them. And of course, 9/11 Truth came about at the time when we were still suffering the consequences of the post 9/11 world. I mean, we still are right now, but I mean, you know, at that time
we will continue to.
Exactly. Well, it shaped the whole future. I mean, it changed everything. I mean, they aren't kidding when they say that. Didn't change physics, though.
No, it didn't.
They don't want people talking about that. But people are more emotionally attached to 9/11, and now the technology has gotten such that people can talk about these type of things quicker after the event happens. And that, I think, is going to be noted in the history books as what changed the course of history also. I mean, 9/11 changed the course of history in one way, but I think the technology and people coming together and speaking out and being able to kind of organize and you know, bring this movement to America, to the public, is really going to change the direction that this whole world goes in. And I think they're going to say that, yeah, the Internet user-created content was responsible for that.
I think you're onto something.
Exactly. Okay, so your book, you say it's going to be coming out. How are people going to be able to buy it?
Oh, in the next few months. And they don't have to buy it. I'll post it on my website. I mean, it's through Friesen Press in Canada. But like I say, I'm not hawking my book here.
All right, cool. Well, Sean, thank you so much for coming on 9/11 Freefall.
All right, you're welcome.
Thanks for listening. Remember, you can hear this program every Thursday night on No Lies Radio at 10 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Pacific. You can also download this program by going to 911freefall.com. This is Andy Steele saying you have a great week. Good luck.